Hello, good evening. Hello if you're driving. Hello if you're listening at home. Hello if you're serving a custodial sentence and you just wanna go home. And hello if you're a cowboy with a transistor radio in one hand and the reins of a barking bronco in the other, in a late night rodeo, yeah.
This is Radio 4, and you're listening to Hearing with Hegley.
No, thank you. Thank you very much indeed. Very kind, very loving, very nice, very oopy poopy poop. And the first poem I'm going to do from this book is called Luton, and this is a poem about the town of my upbringing and the conflict between my working class origins and the middle class status conferred upon me by a university education. And it's called Luton. I remember Luton as I'm swallowing my crouton. This is another one about living in Luton and... Luton stuff seems to be going well, good. This is called On the Booze. My dad very rarely drank, but one time when he did, my mother blew her lid rather, and leaving the lather and the sink, she said, "You stink. You stink of drink. You've tried to hide it with a peppermint, but I don't think it's done the job, because you blinking stink, Bob." "It's obnoxious. Let some air through. Open the windows, will you, and the door." He had had two halves of lager 3 days before. This is a Mother's Day poem that I wrote, and it's called Smothering Sunday. To a wonderful mother with wrinkly skin, this card was concocted by one of your kin. I hope that you like it. It's specially for you. I've sprinkled some glitter on top of some glue. I don't like the bought ones. I thought you should know. They're too superficial and £2 a throw, some of them. Three people enjoying that poem, listeners, here at the studio. This is called Gaul, and this is about a Roman legionary with ideas above his station. "Once a centurion soldier said, 'Venus, how I want to hold you.' She replied, 'I'm a god, and it's great on my tod.' And his mate said, 'Marcellus, I told you.'" The hearing difficulty. When she was about 9, unbeknown to the rest of the family, my sister filled in a newspaper coupon requesting further information from a hearing aid company in London. And a representative travelled the 32 miles to our home in Luton to give more information about the product. Realising that it was not enough to say, "Not today, thank you, or we're not interested in God," my mother burst into the living room where Angela and I were playing Monopoly and demanded an explanation of this preposterous arrival. Angela said there was a girl in her class who was a bit deaf, and she thought a little hearing aid would be of help. My mother then dragged her out to the front door to repeat the story so the man could see that he was dealing with an idiot. The next piece is called In the Name of the Lord, in which I take the name of the Lord letter by letter and use each letter to begin a word or phrase to help you understand the Lord a bit better. J, just like his dad. E, ever so just, like his dad. S, speckless, he never wore glasses. As far as we know. U, this is where you get an opportunity to describe the Lord beginning with U. Any ideas?
Yeti.
Quite funny. It's quite good. It's wrong. It's actually unable to swim. S, sometimes I wonder if he was praying for the betraying kiss of Judas so as not to miss out on his Easter egg. Didn't think you'd get that one. C, right, there's a clue for C. Yeah, what I'm doing, everybody, all you people out there, is I'm going like this. Carpenter, good try. It's actually cut bread into very thin slices. Anybody want that explaining? No? Good. Okay, here's the clue for H. Sorry? Peeve? No, that's a good try. That's a good try. It's actually hated indoor markets. Are really easy to spot in a crowd on a Good Friday. I wonder if he had a dog. And if he did, was it called Rover or Jehovah? And did it bury Adam's rib at the bottom of the garden? S, escapologist. And T, took him 3 days, but he did it. Okay, back to family matters now. The Cub Scout Diary. One Christmas, I told my dad that my sister had scribbled on the pages of my new Cub Scout diary. When he confronted her about the damage and she pleaded innocent, I asked who did it, if she never. And realizing there was no other likely suspect, assuming our parents to be above such a senseless violation, Angela said that although she had no recollection of the incident, the culprit must have been her. An admission which my father felt warranted a thorough beating. What had actually occurred was, whilst entering my address in the diary, which I wanted to look as neat as possible, I had made a mistake, crossed it out, made a mess, and lost my temper, ruining the book with a series of indelible markings. When the frenzy was over, I decided that somebody should suffer for this act of destruction, and that person should be my sister. And this is, thank you. This is called On the Bus. For a while, I was a bus conductor. And one day, my dad got on my bus and sat on the long seat next to my cubbyhole. He was proud to see me in a uniform and a job, and in a loud voice, he said to everyone, "Do you remember the bus conductor's outfit you had when you were a boy, John?" And I said, "No, Dad, but I remember how you used to enjoy beating me." This is a love poem that was written by my dog. Unfortunately, the dog can't be here to perform the poem himself. He's been injured, he's been knocked down, and he's all right, he's okay, in case you're worrying. The dog is all right. He's got a clot on the side of him, and he's just got to have this drained off, and he's walking around with two tubes in his side. They look like rigatoni, that broad pasta. He's got one of those bucket things on his head. And because it's to stop him getting at the tubes, because he really loves pasta. But he did ask me if I'd do this love poem for him. This is a little love poem he wrote about a casual relationship he's been enjoying. This is a love poem by my dog. I saw you in the park. I wanted to be your friend. I tunneled my snout up your non-barking end. Is called The Briefcase. From the very beginning, I loved my glasses. The eye test made me feel important. I wanted to be colourblind as well. For some reason, I was never teased about them as a child, not even at the grammar school, where daily they would mock my briefcase because it was not made of leather. As I recall, there was only ever one boyhood jibe aimed at my glasses, and this a fairly oblique one. Oi, double glazing. Where did you get that plastic briefcase? In adult years, I got a lot more trouble. On one occasion, a rabble threw a rubble at my glasses. It was after this that I decided to take action. I bought myself a leather briefcase and the next day set out to face my building site tormentors. Somehow the briefcase in my hand was a stand against a land which had gradually lost its magic for me, a joyful absurdity in the face of the tragically commonplace. As I approached the contractors for once, it felt like my world again. "What have you got in the briefcase then, Four Eyes?" was the question. Power. Power, lads. was my reply. The power of the human imagination. And I walked proudly and steadily past them in a shower of flying masonry. Max is a dog with a problem, the sort of problem it's a job to ignore. The first time they all thought it was funny, but not anymore. Picture the scene, this home-loving hound is sleeping by the fire with the family round. He wakes up and he makes a little sound. A little Albert gets it first, cause he's near as to the ground. Albert's mum gets wind of it and she says, open the door. And whatever we've been feeding him, I don't think we should give him no more. Max does another one like old Kippers. Wakes up daddy in his fireside slippers. Daddy wakes up and daddy says, open the door. And what does Albert say?
Albert says, it's open, dad, I did it when he did it before. About. Yesterday it happened while we were out in the car. And it's a small car.
And Granny, she was sick. Yeah, Granny, she just let it go. All over the front row. And it went in Granddad's hair. Yeah. And he wished he was wearing a toupee, cause then he could have thrown it away. He could have thrown it out the window, but the fact that his hair was stuck to his head, well, it hindered him a little bit, didn't it? But you can't blame Grandma, you can't blame that woman. She's not used to it like we are. Maybe we should swap him for a budgerigar. Max is smelly.
He can interfere with your telly.
But luckily, he's not an elephant. It's almost time for us to go, yeah. You've had the edits, now here are the credits for who's been here inside your radio. There's been Susan Norton, Keith Moore, Nigel, Roy O'Shea, Tony Curtis, myself, John Heckley, and the production was by Phil Clark. You've been harking to us.